Big thanks to Test Dome, one of our sponsors of this episode. Are you in search of new talent? Now is the perfect time to hire. Last year, tech companies laid off more than 90,000 workers, and that tech talent is searching for new jobs. But if you've got dozens of job applicants, which ones are worth interviewing? If everyone looks good on paper, you can use Test Dome to check technical skills of potential employees. You can score the answers automatically, a report will show you a detailed breakdown. Test Dome can screen more than 90 skills with tests for languages like C# or JavaScript, frameworks like React and Django, and job roles like a DBA or QA. And the questions use samples of actual work. Go check out testdome.com/Hanselminutes to sign up today and receive 20% bonus invites on your first purchase. That's testdome.com/Hanselminutes and sign up today. Hi, I'm Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. Today I'm chatting with Ben West. He's the founder and CEO of Medical Data Networks, creator of T1Pal, and also a Night Scout open source contributor and a type 1 diabetic. How are you, sir?
Great, Scott. How are you today?
I'm getting there. So here we are on a podcast, two type 1 diabetics. I've been diabetic now for almost 30 years. When were you diagnosed?
In 2003.
Okay. And were you just walking around and you just tipped over, or what happened? What was your symptoms that caused you to realize something was wrong?
Well, I was in college. I was in school. And my primary thing was I noticed that I was waking up a lot in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom. And I just had to urinate all the time, and that's a pretty common symptom. That was the main thing, and I noticed I was so thirsty all the time that I couldn't even eat. I was so thirsty.
I remember I called myself a two-fisted drinker. I would have 2-liter soda pops in each hand, and you didn't know why you were drinking, like, all the 7-Up. It's an unbelievable thirst.
Unquenchable thirst. I thought, something is clearly wrong. So much thirst and so much urination that it was obvious something is wrong. There was one night in particular, I'd counted, it was like 7 or 8 times. I had gotten up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom, which means I calculated I'm not getting any sleep if I'm doing that. So something is definitely wrong.
Right. And that's the body just basically marinating in its own sugar and doing anything it can to filter it out. It's trying to keep you and I vertical. I had the same kind of symptoms, and then I also lost about 40 pounds, and I turned gray and had a very sunken face, and people said, "You look like crap." And I went to the doctor, and my blood sugar was off the charts, and the rest is history.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that there's this lethargic feeling that kind of takes over. It was like I couldn't shake the lead out. I was leaded, this incredibly leaded, weighed down, heavy, mm-hmm. heavy, lethargic.
Right. So you and I are type 1 diabetics. That means we have non-functional pancreases. We do not create any of our own insulin. And this is not something that we can. We can't cure this. So we love our listeners, but we can't cure this with yoga or tea or cinnamon or anything, right? So we have to give ourselves externalized insulin, and we have to put a lot of attention into this. Now, were you an engineer when you in college when you were diagnosed?
I was actually a music major. I wanted to go into the arts and humanities and do music, choral music, the rest of my life.
Choral music. Okay. So I've always told the story that every diabetic engineer ever, the next day when they wake up and they learn that this is all about math, one of the things about diabetes is it's a very insidious disease that means that people who are good at math live longer than people who aren't, which is totally unfair. And every diabetic engineer goes and says, "I'm going to solve this with code." But you're a choral major at this point.
Mm-hmm.
When did you decide to get involved in the tech side?
Well, I did grow up a child of Bell Labs. I grew up in New Jersey. My father worked at Bell Labs, so I got growing up. I got tours of the buildings where transistors were invented and Unix took place. And so it was pretty clear to me. I was always interested in computers. I grew up doing computer games, getting on the net in my early teens, the first browsers. And it was obvious to me this is pretty cool stuff to study. So I actually did double major for a while in computer science and music. And both are actually very demanding majors. So I actually took a little break and decided I really want to study music, and I can do computers you know, I can do computers if I need to, but I really want to study music. Mm-hmm. So I did have, when I was diagnosed, I did have some, I had made some things in PHP for fun on Christmas break. And when I was first diagnosed, the first thing I did do actually was I started taking notes on index cards. It wasn't long before I had a fistful of more index cards than I could possibly carry, right? Of logs of all the treatments that I was doing, the carbohydrates, the glucose, the insulin, the meals, what the composition of the meals might be. And so I came up with a PHP-based web cloud-based interface pretty quickly. I think within months of being diagnosed. And I was so horrified by what I had created. It was obviously that I was never going to use this thing because it was just a wall of inputs. Just enter this field here, enter this foot here, and endless as far as you could go. And I realized I don't have any time or energy to be working with that software. But that was something that I did initially create very early on. Yeah.
Yeah, that seems like everyone does that. I tell the story about my Palm Pilot application because I was diagnosed maybe a couple of years before you were, and I went, and I loved the Palm Pilot, so I was carrying it around everywhere. I wanted my blood sugar to be with me. And again, every diabetic engineer ever, if you're an accountant, you're going to make an Excel spreadsheet. And I think we all saw, both on CompuServe and Reddit and early, you know, bulletin boards, you know, everyone had that magical Excel spreadsheet with the charts and the graphs, and they were writing programs to manage this. It's a very active management a disease. It requires active management. But you felt the need to build something of your own. Was there a community? I was very alone in the 90s and didn't have a community. Was there a burgeoning community in the early 2000s?
No, I wasn't part of any online diabetes community. And the thing that I wrote in PHP was just essentially localhost web server. It never made it off my computer.
When did you link up and find that there were people out there? I started on like CompuServe bulletin boards and started finding, you know, when I put my application on the web and had a blog, I started to find out that like, oh, I'm not the only engineer that was trying to solve this. And that's when things started linking up in the world.
For me, that was more 2008, 2009, 2010 was a transformational year for me. I had started my career out at Alexa Internet, which was owned by Amazon. I helped with the Alexa toolbar, if you remember that. And I had several stints right after that. But it was really clear that the type of stuff that we were doing in the cloud, that even me as a music major, I could be hired into industry and make enormous progress on cloud infrastructure, big data, real-time dashboards. And it was really obvious to me that there was this mismatch in terms of the things that were possible and the things that people expected, and yet the things that people were actually doing in practice, especially when it came to the application of technology to diabetes. So for me, that was when, you know, in 2003, I was told, and I kept studying music on the basis of what I was told by the experts, that everything was going to be fixed in the next 5 years. They're going to have an implantable CGM, implantable pump. Everything would work harmoniously together. I'd come in maybe a couple times a year to the doctor for a special kind of shot, special checkup, but everything would be taken care of for me. And on the basis of that advice, I actually avoided going into, I actually remember I had this thought of, you know, should I do something with diabetes and computers? Should I go into computers because it has the possibility of impacting my diabetes treatment? And I remember thinking, no, it seems like these people have really got it. These people have got it. I can trust them. They're going to take care of everything. And it wasn't until I had gained 4 or 5 years in industry that I realized, you know, maybe we should be doing something as a community. And that's where I started finding folks on 2Diabetes, if you remember that network. Eventually, those kind of transformed into the Twitter and Facebook mega platforms that we have today.
Yeah, and it's worth pointing out for our listeners that it cannot be overstated that your experience and my experience, and I think 99% of type 1 diabetics' experiences are absolutely the same, in that we were told this will be cured in 5 years, and I've been told every year for 30 years, 5 more years.
Yeah, it'll be maybe not cured, but it will have something that is a functionally equivalent to a cure.
Right.
If not a cure, that you're not going to, the point is you're not going to worry about this in 5 years.
Right, right.
The things that we're asking you to do now are transient mm-hmm. and temporary, and we're not going to ask you to do this for the rest of your life.
Exactly. The ongoing maintenance. I've described it as having like Task Manager open, and there's this background process that's taking up 15, 20% of your CPU. And, you know, right now it's called system. You know, what is that thing? What is that process? What is it wasting all this time? We have a process running in the background called diabetes all the time, and it's obnoxious, and it just takes up background mm-hmm. psychic weight. And we want to release that, and active management and some system will allow us to do that. Okay, so you start plugging into online communities, and then other folks are out there trying to do what? What is it that we're trying to do with our diabetes data?
Well, what I talk about now is I talk about exercising our data rights. And what that means is actually a whole bunch of different things. But with people with diabetes, one of the things you learn pretty quickly is that you're using a whole host of technology to manage the disease. So if we just go back to the 2000s, we're talking about the glucose meter, the ever-present glucose meter. In fact, I didn't have just one glucose meter. I had five. Right. I had one for the gym bag, had one for the office, had one for the car, had one for in my jacket, had one in my backpack, and I had one at home, maybe two or three at home. Right. And that's because you absolutely need this technology just to make it through the day. You know, your blog post was actually a major, I think there was one in 2012 that was kind of blew everything up because it had allowed several folks to kind of connect with this idea that what we're expecting and what's possible, there's a mismatch. I started focusing with exercising the data rights for the insulin pump. I knew that I've got this insulin pump, which replaces the syringe or a smart pen sometimes. But the insulin pump is wonderful because it's an example. It's sold to you as an example of biomimicry in action. It's sold to you on the basis that, you know, your body has discrete tiny micro doses of insulin all the time that your body knows to administer because of a feedback loop built into your body. And the idea with the pump is very much the same way. It was sold to us on the basis that this thing is going to have what we call a basal rate, micro doses all the time that together form what we call a base rate to cover your all day insulin needs. And then we have the special bolus function, which is we're going to give you a larger dose. We know that you need to adjust your glucose from a high level to a normal, to a lower level, or we know that there's extra glucose coming in because of a meal that you're eating. We can correct for those things with this bolus function where we give a bunch of insulin all at once as a dose. And so I thought, you know, it would be great just to have a dashboard where we're logging all of the, I can have multiple people review with me just to make sure, A, that the insulin pump is working correctly as expected, and that B, then we can make use of the data to optimize my therapy. And that second part, the idea of actually optimizing the therapeutic outcomes, that was always a big hypothetical for me. What was more important was at least if we can get some expert review, we have the possibility of making that true. But the main thing would be let's make sure that the device is operating as expected. In 2010, I actually went to the hospital because I had a high glucose. I was in DKA, which is a very high glucose. This is where that extreme of what we were talking about earlier, where your body is marinating in it.
Right. Diabetic ketoacidosis, DKA.
This is actually the next step where not only are you kind of marinating in your own juices, but you're actually acidifying. You're kind of boiling to acid on the inside, so to speak. It's very unpleasant, and it really left a mark on me. When I was in the hospital for this event, one of the things that the doctors began to question is exactly that. The doctor said, well, look, you're on the insulin pump. By our definition, you're in the hospital, so it's not working. The therapy isn't working. Right? Something's not working. And for them, it wasn't really, it doesn't matter to them whether there's a minor malfunction in the pump or there's something major. It's all the same. Something is not working. And so they actually had me go through tech support on the phone with the insulin pump vendor. And I realized it took like 2 or 3 hours to go through these diagnostics. And I thought, this is insane. The stuff that we're doing to establish if the insulin pump is working or not doesn't make sense given the necessity and the quality of the information that should be available. all of this information is digital. It should be able, we should be able to get it from point A to point B where we can review it as a team without all this blind trust involved.
This episode of Hansel Minutes is brought to you by User Interviews. User Interviews connects researchers with quality participants. Participants earn money for their feedback on real products. There is high demand for software developers and engineers to provide feedback on products being created for developers. It's free to sign up, and most studies are less than an hour and pay over $60. Some studies pay several hundred dollars for a one-on-one interview. You can share your opinions with top brands, Adobe, Intuit, Spotify, Amazon, and many more. Are you ready to earn extra income from sharing your expert opinion? Head over to userinterviews.com/hello to sign up and participate today. That's userinterviews.com/hello. I used to use a one-touch meter and then an AccuCheck, and they would all have different interfaces and different plugs. One of them would look like a headphone jack. One of them required you to buy a special $30 serial port plug. And we would make these ridiculous Franken cables with 25 port to 9 port serial to headphone jack to USB. And then we would have to figure out how to tell the pump, give me the data. And we would go and eventually connect like a telnet or a terminal to the thing, talk to the COM port, and figure out what keystrokes do I need to get this thing to give me the data, my data, the data I produced, the data my body produced. And you couldn't just call and say, hey, what's the command to tell the pump to give me the data? They would say, use our proprietary software, as opposed to use this open standard.
Now, at this time, 2009, 2010, the case actually developed that the proprietary software that we're referring to didn't actually work on any computer that you could buy in the store, because the software is a little bit dated. It used some older technology from Java and Microsoft that in 2010, the world had eclipsed that technology. Microsoft didn't support that technology. Java didn't support that technology. No one supported it. And in fact, if you bought a new computer from the store, they wouldn't sell you any software or any computer that you could use with that equipment. So it was actually a real problem where you could not buy a new computer that would work with your insulin pump.
Right. It was not a priority anymore because most people who had the insulin pumps trusted them blindly, and they were not connecting them to computers regularly. And even then, you'd need a special USB adapter to do it. That was really largely kept under wraps by therapists, by doctors and nurses.
Yeah, and from what I understand, it was just as bad for them. They have they would call them the octopus stations, and you go into the clinic and they've got this giant octopus coming out of someone's desk, and that's the one station that the whole clinic has to go through. So it's not efficient, it's not good for the doctors either.
Right. The octopus referring to all of the cables and all the different things. Like, you think USB was bad. This was a time where every pump and every meter had a different cable, and these kiosks would try to solve those problems. I remember working with with Sweet Spot, a company that created those devices. It was just an awful hand, 'cause there's no standards. No one got together and just said this. So you're a strong believer in us as diabetics owning our data. So when did people start, quote unquote, breaking into these devices and figuring out how to get the data out?
Well, I started work on the insulin pumps, on the Medtronic Paradigm Series insulin pumps. And I had a Python project that was kind of really concentrated on just that kind of device. Around that time, I started finding other folks were doing their own things. And I started just linking to them on GitHub. GitHub, of course, is kind of a social media for coders, for programmers. And I created a series of meta projects where I started searching. I regularly spent time searching for diabetes and started linking all the projects together. And around that time in 2013, the Tidepool folks started getting together. So Amy Tendrick and Howard Look through the first D-Data conference around the same time that Tidepool was being formed. People started circulating and talking a lot in the Bay Area where I was located, but also internationally and nationally as well. And around that time, several folks were working on complementary projects So I was working on the insulin pump. And I knew from my experience with the web that we needed independent device drivers for every kind of device driver. And then we needed a platform to kind of unify these different devices. And that given those basic building blocks, we could really build something special as a community. And John Kostick and Lane Desborough had collaborated on some work on the CGM side. So the CGM side is all about the glucose measurements.
Right. Continuous glucose meters.
And there was a fellow named CompBrain that had a Python driver for Dexcom G4 on GitHub. And so I had the pieces for the insulin pump. CompBrain had the Python pieces for the glucose driver. And then Lane and John Kostick had a kind of Android mobile piece of software that ran on an Android device that could talk to the Dexcom G4. And it could upload that to some cloud software that Lane had prototyped that could keep it all in the web and have a real-time dashboard. And then I had all of the material for the insulin pump and the glucose meters on kind of in Python. So at that point, we had the basic recipe. I recognized we have a recipe here. We have all the ingredients for the recipe, where we have the insulin data and the glucose data and real-time dashboard with sharing. I thought, okay, this is something really special. This requires some special attention. Let's really focus on making something greater than the sum of its parts now. Because now we've got all these individual building blocks. Let's actually try building something with them. And so that was when Night Scout kind of really took off. I had this roommate, Brandon Arbeiter from Tidepool at the time, and he came home this one day with an extra Android phone, an extra cell phone plan, and then this mess of emails and attachments and notes that said, when this happens, you got to Google over here and change this thing in the source code, and a bunch of instructions, but you had to really cobble it together yourself. It wasn't a reproducible build. And that's where I really got interested, because I had been studying scores of open source projects on the web, trying to figure out how do these great authors do all of these amazing projects that you see? What did it take to build that project? Because you come into some of these projects as an outsider and you're just totally wowed. They have this sparkling website, they've got documentation, they've got the open source code, they've got unit tests, they've got everything, right? And you go, how do you start from nothing and build that up? And so having studied that, and having found all the recipe, the ingredients for this recipe, I started putting the ingredients together. And out of that came Night Scout. And Night Scout is kind of a cloud-based application. At the time, it was mobile software and cloud-based software, and they both work in conjunction. And the thing that they did together was they harmonized all of these different devices. Eventually, it was the insulin pump and the continuous glucose monitor. And that was what formed the basis of what we call OpenAPS.
I remember talking and meeting with Scott Liebrand and Dana Lewis, Dana being the godmother of the Open Artificial Pancreas System, sitting with them at a Qdoba in Seattle, and them showing us, she would carry around this, it was called a fanny pack, this little pack around her waist, and she had the pump and the CGM meter and a Raspberry Pi, and it was all working together with a big battery. And the way I usually describe it to the normally sugared is that every couple of months we go to the doctor with our pump and our meter, and we plug into that kiosk, and every 3 months or so it downloads the software. And what Dana and Scott were doing was, rather than doing a dump every 3 months, let's just do a dump every 5 minutes. And yep. we lied to the pump, and we lied to the CGM, the CGM being the read and the pump being the write. And we just go, hey, we're the doctors. Dump your data. And that's the beginning of that control loop. And it was those interfaces that the community and yourself and others put together to make all of that happen. And the Night Scout, of course, being that database, that centralized cloud database. It's a personal health database. Like, mine's running on my own computer. It could be run by a service. It could be run in a cloud provider. It could be, like you said at the very beginning, it could be running on localhost. It's totally up to you, because it's open source and in your control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Night Scout is what we call a personal diabetes hub. That's a place where you can exercise your data rights. You can collect all your diabetes data into one place. And as a result, you get these connectivity benefits where other applications can take advantage of your data on your behalf. So it's a personal diabetes hub.
Yeah. And the continuous meter that I use is called a Dexcom. And Dexcom is a company, a commercial entity. They have their own products and their own cloud. And most people who have a Dexcom sign up for their cloud and they send their data up to the cloud. Why would I not just want to leave it there? Why would I want to have that data mirrored into Night Scout as opposed to just leaving it at this commercial entity's cloud?
Yeah, well, we talked about the ways that you can exercise your data rights. So Dexcom is great, but their terms of service are limited. And that means the applications that you can use for your benefit are limited to the other ones that Dexcom also kind of personally approves. And that choice limits your choice. And you're able to get more choice when you control and you're the one that's able to decide. So there's a couple of examples I like to give. There's hardware devices. There's things like the Sugar Pixel and the M5 stack, in addition to several of the devices that you've worked on. So, for example, I know that you've worked on, I think one of the nice ones is the keyboard color, where you're using your keyboard, and if the lights around you or your keyboard color changes in response to your glucose, it's another subtle signal that's carried by your environment, so it's ambient. And so it's something that doesn't necessarily have to bark at you or get your attention, but something that your environment conveys to you. That's a nice property that none of the Dexcom options will provide to you. But because you've got your diabetes connectivity through Night Scout, you're able to develop the solutions on your own devices or on the devices that matter to you that fit into your lifestyle.
Exactly. So then I can go and ask Alexa what my blood sugar is. And then Nathan Rajlich, who is a Node.js committer, had the idea to put it in his Git prompt. And then I took that and ran with it and put it into my Git prompt with a thing called Oh My Posh, because once it's a REST API, you can do whatever you want. We put it into Python portals. I haven't told you this yet, but there's a thing called a Sandman Doppler. It's a big radio. It's a smart radio. I can go and write a very simple shortcut using the iPhone's shortcut programming language. And now when I plug my phone into my nightstand, instead of showing the time, my radio, my nightstand clock radio shows my blood sugar. It's a smart display. Anywhere I want to put these things, I can. And ultimately, that would have been much harder if it had been kept in that commercial entity. So having a REST API for your own body puts you in a lot of control. So setting these things up in the cloud can be challenging. The Night Scout Foundation is a nonprofit that people can donate money to that is out there to tell people how to use Night Scout, support the project. I ran mine in Azure for a while. I ran it in Heroku for a while. And there's lots of different clouds that we can do free hosting. What is the limits of free hosting? Like, is Night Scout not a very heavy application, or will it eventually use up all of the free hosting at somewhere like an Azure or a Heroku?
Yeah, so Night Scout uses resources. And many historically, when Night Scout was designed, it was a very simple application. And so initially, when Night Scout was first released, we were only doing very basic glucose monitoring. Not much else was going on. And the usage was also limited to maybe two or three people. We didn't have lots of devices and apps looking to use the data. So there's a couple different resource types. One resource type that we talk about a lot in the cloud is we talk about storage versus compute types of resources. So compute resource has to do with if you have an application that's running, compute is the thing that's running your application, whereas storage is the thing that's storing all of the data for you. So storage is typically measured in volume, meaning you have maybe 100 gigs, maybe 2 gigs, maybe some amount of storage available that you fill. And when you've reached your limit, then you're over capacity. That's your quota. And And then compute has to do with the notion of how many, is it going to run all the time? Or is it not going to run some of the time? Is it, are they committing that it's going, that it's going to run all the time, that it's intended to run all the time? And what resources are they making available to make sure that that happens? So with Night Scout, over the years, we've asked Night Scout to do more and more and more. We've asked it to store more data. We've asked it to store data from more devices. And we've asked additional applications to interact with that data through Night Scout. And as a result, some of the vendors that we see don't necessarily support Night Scout in the way that most people kind of expect. When people started using Night Scout back in 2014, it was certainly true that you could set up Night Scout on one of the free usage tiers, freemium quota tiers from the vendors, and Night Scout would actually fit inside of that. Today, what we're seeing is Night Scout doesn't fit inside many of the free tiers as well as it used to. So what we do now is what we recommend is people secure the right resources to rely on Night Scout for a long time, so more than 3 months, more than 6 months. What we've kind of planned on is roughly 2 years of burden-free usage. And I think that's closer to what most people expect when they're going to start a new application, a new technology that they're not familiar with, and you're starting it up and someone says, oh yeah, here's a good starting guide. I think most people kind of expect that that's going to last a fairly long time as well.
Yeah. I know that I've got now many years, 5 or 6 years of blood sugar data. So I use a lot of storage. I've also got a half dozen, maybe even a dozen different devices pulling from Night Scout. And I'm using the open source artificial pancreas system called Loop. And I experiment with OpenAPS. So I will use up a free instance a lot, very, very quickly. Everyone's usage is different. So, as we get towards the end of the podcast here, it's worth pointing out that Medical Data Networks has a product called T1PAL.com, which is basically hosted Night Scout. So instead of me going to Azure and setting up a virtual machine or going to Heroku and setting up a dyno, you can just pay per user per month and you basically get the open source Night Scout system hosted and managed by Medical Data Networks.
Yeah, that's right. It's what we like to call Night Scout as a service. So we offer dedicated Night Scout as a service. And the same way that something like WordPress or something else works, you can run it yourself or go to WordPress.com and have them run it for you. The same thing works with Night Scout. You can download the software and run it yourself, or you can go to a service provider like T1PAL.com and have T1PAL manage it for you. So T1PAL actually does, it's per account, and then there's 5 sites that you can manage when you sign up with an account.
Very cool. So thank you so much for chatting with me today. There's a lot of really exciting work happening in the diabetes space. We've mentioned some of the names that have been the grandmothers and grandfathers of the diabetes space. Certainly we've missed a few. If we have failed to mention someone's name, we apologize. But it's just a wonderful community, and folks can check out and join these communities if you or a family member is a diabetic on CGM in the Cloud on Facebook or Looped on Facebook. And you can also, if you're a developer and you want to get involved, you can go and take a look at Zulip, Z-U-L-I-P. And there's a lot of active discussion around all of these different products, as well as the issue tracker on the Night Scout CGM remote monitor repository on GitHub. Thanks so much, Ben West, for chatting with me today.
Thanks, Scott. This has been great.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.